Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
Word association with John MacArthur.
I use the complete idiot's guide to the Bible.
Unqualified.
Why can't my kids come into the service? Because we have PG-13 services.
Unqualified.
That has a nice ring to it. Unqualified.
It wasn't a compliment.
Junior church has taken over. It's designed for elementary kids or junior high.
Who doesn't feel unqualified?
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Hang. Hey, hang. Hey. Nope. I'm not getting a word, so I guess we need Phil Johnson. This is Wretched Radio. Phil, I'm trying to divine the future, which is totally not biblical, but I'm trying to be a modern day Nostradamus. Nah, he was a complete charlatan too. The point is, I've been thinking about the future, and I haven't received any sort of word from heaven about what the future holds. Nevertheless, I wanted to ask you for your perspective, what you think after being an evangelical Christianity and in Christian ministry now for almost 5 decades, what is the future of evangelicalism? How do you see it, Phil Johnson of Grace to you?
You know, that's the nature of the future. We don't know. We just don't know.
I know. If that's why you're here, Phil.
Right.
You're supposed to be the one who has the best insight.
If you're a student of history, you can tell that there are cycles in what happens with the church. I mean, this was the whole point that Robert Schindler, who was a friend of Charles Spurgeon, he wrote an article called The Downgrade, and it prompted this controversy that dominated the end of Spurgeon's life, the downgrade controversy. But his whole argument was, if you look at church history, there are these cycles of belief and apostasy. And it follows the same course time after time after time. You can see it even in scripture, in the book of Judges. You know, there would be a judge who would deliver the nation, and things look triumphant for a very brief season, and then people would fall into apostasy again. And the church has the same pattern, and it has really, going back at least to the Protestant Reformation, following how Protestant churches have developed and degraded and then revived and then degraded again. And we're in a point where I think the evangelical movement is practically at the low point. And so if history follows its course, I think we're going to see a revival.
Now, wait a second. Hold the phone, Henrietta. Phil, you're saying that evangelical Christianity is at a low point. Now, I'm going to explore why you think that, but come on. I mean, we were riding high like 5 minutes ago. Why do you think that we just suddenly slip-slided away?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. And in sort of the past decade and a half in microcosm shows that cycle. I was very encouraged when Together for the Gospel started. And the idea was we're going to emphasize the gospel and defend the doctrine of atonement and defend the doctrine of justification by faith. And that's going to be our theme because that's what ties us together. And so this organization, Together for the Gospel, that's built into the name, for the gospel. It was supposed to be very gospel-centered, and that was going to be what drove the direction. And that lasted maybe 4 or 5 years at the most. And then it seemed like all the key players in that movement got swept up in wokeism and, you know, the social justice battle, and moved off topic almost instantly. And that organization doesn't even exist
anymore.
Wow,
so you think it was only 4 or 5 years that lasted? Okay, so that the T4G is gone. I get that. But wouldn't you affirm that there are a lot of really good guys out in good churches scattered throughout the nation? They just aren't high profile. So, all right.
Yeah.
Is it possible, Phil, that your observation is we're at a low point because we don't have those high-profile power leaders that we've enjoyed for so many decades? But do you think that might be separate than what's really going out in the field?
You know, I think it depends on how you look at it. that's what keeps me from being utterly discouraged. The knowledge that there are lots of men out there in smaller churches, in obscure places, who preach the word and they're faithful to scripture and they're just doing what they should be doing. And that's how God always works, by the way, through a remnant. The gospel has never advanced in the history of the church. The gospel has never advanced because of majority opinion. Whenever the majority gets hold of, what seems to be gospel enthusiasm, it fades very quickly or veers off track.
Okay, we're trying to predict the future here and where it's going and what have you. But this is just observing the status quo right now. And I know that the deaths of R.C. Sproul, Vody Bachum, and of course Dr. John MacArthur, those are just massive losses. I mean, it's like, whew, they're kind of the center of the hubcap that held everything together. But because they're gone, that doesn't necessarily change the entire state of evangelicalism, does it?
No, in fact, all of those men trained numerous young guys.
True.
And those are the obscure people in small places preaching today. So, some of them might gain greater influence. I don't know. But there's been so much publicity over the past 5 or 6 years about the dangers of the celebrity movement, celebrity pastors. And we don't need celebrities leading the evangelical movement. We need men who don't really care what the average public thinks about them, but they care what God thinks.
Do you think, Phil, that whatever the season is, so we've lost these big guys that were just so steady for so long, that God is either going, okay, to use the phrase, and I know it's loaded with baggage, we're not going to have a season of, if you will, celebrity Christians anymore. Do you think, though, that he could be raising up new ones? If you had to say with any degree of certainty, what would it be as far as God preparing men to rise to those levels of influence? Do you think that's going on?
Yes, I'm certain he is, because that's what he's always done, not only throughout church history, but going all the way back to the beginning of the story of redemption. Moses, nobody knew he was going to be a great leader. He spent 40 years on the backside of the desert. That was his training. That was how he came to know Jehovah as well as he did.
So you think, here's what I think, though, needs to happen for, if we're going to have leaders like MacArthur, Sproul, et cetera, I think that something needs to accompany their ascension. Institutions. I don't think that even the most popular Christian YouTuber can be that sort of steady vocal influence for the body, for our circles of evangelicalism, if they're not connected to an institution. I don't think social media sensation is enough. Got to be a seminary. It's got to be a church, a publishing, something, I think, substantial and concrete needs to accompany that sort of ascendancy and authority, you say?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. In fact, the very nature of online influencers, YouTubers, and Twitter ex-celebrities, they're going for hits, they're going for popularity. It's antithetical to what God uses, which is not to say that there's nothing good could ever come out of YouTube or social media. There are people who use those media to speak the truth and do it without compromise. But that's not the dominant theme there. And institutions have their own set of problems as well. I think you're right that usually in any era you look at, there'll be an institution or two that is really holding the line and influencing people with biblical convictions and, strong convictions, but they tend to apostatize over time.
Yeah,
I can't think of a seminary that's been evangelical and conservative for, more than 50 or 60 years. It's uncanny how quickly academic institutions apostatize. And you could say something similar about churches. And again, you see this all the way back to the beginning of church history. The letters Christ wrote to the churches in Revelation 2 and 3, it's amazing how many of those churches had veered so quickly off track.
Right. Although I feel I can think of one that hasn't veered off track yet. And I feel quite confident in this. Alpharetta Bible Church. Okay, we're only 2 years old, but we haven't veered off track.
But, you know, if you asked to list the number of churches in the world that have maintained a solid gospel witness for multiple centuries, 200-300 years, there are some. Spurgeon's Tabernacle in London, the Metropolitan Tabernacle, is one of them. That church was more than 100 years old when Spurgeon came. And if you went there today, you'd still hear the same gospel preached.
But Spurgeon College, though, is shut down, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like I said, academic institutions tend to apostatize even more quickly. But that happens even in churches. And there are rare churches that have held the line, but that's unusual. And I think it's up to individual Christians and particularly Christian leaders to be steadfast and immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord.
You got to be pulling to the right or you will veer to the left. The State of Evangelical Christianity with our, as always, special guest, Phil Johnson. Grace to you. This is Wretched Radio.
You know those really big questions you get when your kid comes home from college? You know the ones about whether God exists, if the Bible can be trusted, why there's evil in the world, or what's wrong with everyone else's view on sexuality? Yeah, those. Road Trip to Truth doesn't dodge them. This resource is hosted by John Ferbarez, and it goes straight to college campuses and talks to students who are asking these very same questions. All four seasons available right now on Fortis Plus for free. FortisPlus.org.
Hat tip to Masters University. You want to send your kids someplace where they actually still teach the Bible? Not just based on a document that they maybe have in a file cabinet someplace, but they actually use the Bible there. The education at the Masters University, not only biblical, but oh so practical. I encourage you to visit masters.edu/wretched, masters.edu/wretched.
Every man knows what it's like to fight a battle no one else can see. You wake up, you're determined that today is going to be different. This time, you're going to be stronger than the temptation. But then evening comes, and there you are again, right back where you started. You're making promises to yourself that you already know deep down that you're not going to keep tomorrow. That's what Todd Friel gets into very deeply with his resource, Play the Man. It's available right now as an ebook, an audiobook, and video series only at FortisPlus.org. So here's a question. Who's teaching your son what it means to be a man? Is it TikTok? His football coach? Some guy on a podcast who thinks masculinity means to never apologize? Well, here's the problem. Culture keeps handing men two options. Be a doormat or be a bulldozer. And that's why we created Gentle Man, a brand new video series with Todd Friel and Dr. John Krotz. New episodes are dropping every Monday on Fortis Plus. So download the Fortis Plus app on your smartphone, on your smart TV, or just simply go to FortisPlus.org. You ever had a question that you weren't sure your small group could handle? Like, what does the Bible actually say about mental health? Or what does biblical manhood look like for a 20-something who's never seen and modeled? These aren't easy topics, but they're the exact topics our Fortis forums tackle. And all of these Fortis forums are available right now on Fortis Plus, on your phone, your tablet, and even your TV. You can go and download the Fortis Plus app right now on wherever you download apps, or just simply go to FortisPlus.org. Hey, thanks for listening to Wretched Radio today. If you're a man, you're trying to figure out what it actually means to be one. Scripture is not confused. God has a lot to say about what it means to be a man, and Dr. Adam Tyson unpacks that every week on Way of Manhood. If you've ever been impacted by this ministry, would you prayerfully consider becoming an ongoing monthly gospel partner today? All you have to do is go to FortisInstitute.org right now to find out what it would look like in your life to do just that. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Hermeneutics. A vital part of biblical hermeneutics is an understanding of genre. One genre we find in Scripture is narrative. Narratives tell us of real events with real people in real places at a real time. Not everything we read in narratives is condoned by God, but everything we read is part of God working out His plan for the world. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Is there anything in the award envelope? This is Wretched Radio. If I were opening up an envelope which identified inside of it who are the ascendant high-profile guys that can have a decades-long influence in evangelicalism, what names would be written on that card? I got a couple in mind, but I can't help but wonder if Phil Johnson from Grace to You, Grace Community Church, has his eye on some younger fellows who might step into a more prominent role because, well, there's a lot of shoes that have been emptied in the last year. Phil, do you see anybody on the horizon where it's like, yeah, there's an up-and-comer right there?
I do. I'm reluctant to name them because...
I'm not.
You know, really?
Why not?
Let's hear your list.
Riccardi would be one.
Yeah, I love Mike Riccardi. He and I are jointly pastoring the same flock at Grace Church.
I know him.
He has more potential than any young guy I've ever met.
I'll tell you, there's another Johnny Artavanis. Are you following this kid?
Like I said, I'm reluctant to name them. Most of them are people that your listeners never would have heard of.
Yeah.
And the other point of history that makes me uneasy is there are a lot of... In the past, there have always been a lot of people who showed great promise at the beginning and then failed. To name one who's well-known, Clark Pinnock. Clark Pinnock, in his early years, wrote some very, very good and helpful defenses of the authority of Scripture. He seemed like a brilliant mind, very conservative, you know, historic evangelicalism, and he moved off track.
So a time of testing is good. You know, I think there's a Bible verse about new believers becoming elders that might be applicable. So
exactly.
maybe a word of wisdom, Phil, is, hey, as we see these guys and identify these guys, and quite honestly, Phil, there's a ton of them, whether they've got a lot of YouTube subscribers or not, I don't know. But I know the Lord has always got great guys like that. Let's be careful that you don't prop somebody up too quickly. That could be a tragic error. All right. Phil, a question about the future of evangelicalism. It would not be a complete conversation about the subject without talking about Grace Community Church. You still don't have, do you call it a senior pastor at Grace Community Church?
Yeah, I mean, that's not the technical title, but that's how we refer to it.
Do you have a technical title for that role?
John always called himself pastor teacher. He conferred that title, I think, on himself because as he was going through Ephesians, where it says God gives these gifts, pastors and teachers, he said those two words go together. They're not two categories, pastors on the one hand and teachers on the other. He said it's talking about pastor teachers. And so he gave himself that title. He's always been the pastor teacher.
Okay, I can't help it, but I'm so digging church polity these days. And the issue of the elders and whether there is a lead elder, a senior pastor, I can't get enough of that conversation. Do you think that a local church should have a senior pastor and other pastors with adjectives in front of them at all?
Yes, I mean, I'm all in favor of multiple elders. I think it's very important for.
Well, that's obvious. Y'all have got 120 of them?
I think we've got it's like 40.
No, there's more than that. I thought.
I don't know the exact count, but you're right. It's a lot. It's a room full.
It's a room full.
And it's hard to get everybody on the same page because of the number of elders. But you have the advantage of all of this wisdom, all of these points of view. So that, you know, nothing happens too quickly. We discuss all the options on everything, and that's always very helpful. But John played a unique role as the leader of that group. You see that, Pat? I don't know how it could work otherwise. There has to be...
I think every organism needs... I agree with you on that. But biblically, how do you make the case that one of the elders, well, what's the term that that we're all equal, but one's just a little more equal or something, you know, just the leader amongst equals. Okay.
Yeah.
Biblically, how do you get there?
Well, I think scripture does set the pattern that there should be multiple elders, but it never says they're all equal. And you see, even amongst the disciples, Peter was clearly the leader. He exercised a kind of leadership that was undeniable. And then Paul came along in the early church and his voice was dominant. Of course, he was an apostle, so he did have authority over other pastors. But you can see how as he established churches, there were teaching pastors who sort of dominated and led. Dominated might not be the right word. They led the rest of
I've heard some people try to make the case that Paul wrote to Timothy, not to all the elders, but to Timothy. Now, certainly he disseminated it to the elders and to the entire body, but that's been used as support for there's got to be somebody who's a leader amongst the elders. Do you believe, sorry, I can't help but geeking out on ecclesiology, do you think that that leader should therefore have more power / authority or more votes than all the other guys?
No, he has the same vote as all the others.
What about power and authority?
Yeah, if he's gifted in the way, say John MacArthur was gifted, he had a sense of wisdom and biblical understanding that superseded the rest of us. He was just naturally more gifted than any of us. And so, yeah, his opinion usually weighed more than mine.
All right, if all things considered, that it's like the board, the elders, they're kind of tossed. If John MacArthur put his weight behind something, was there kind of an assumption that's the way that we're supposed to go?
Usually, yes, but okay. That wasn't an inviolable rule. There were times when John had ideas and he proposed to the elders, and after some discussion,
it would be like a breath of fresh air. So tell me, when did they think John was wrong? I've never heard that sentence uttered before. That would be fascinating. What did they not vote on that John wanted? You're not going to tell.
For example, at one point, he was asked to speak at an event that had a sort of mixed platform of speakers, and the elders felt that would be send a really confusing message if he went and spoke at that. He was inclined to say yes to that invitation, the elders overruled him. And that said, was just one example.
Okay, fair
People
enough.
People used to ask me all the time, is there anything you disagree with John on? And yeah, of course there are, but I'm not going to put that on my Twitter feed and I'm not going to make a big deal
out of it. Doesn't do a whole lot of good, female deacons. But the point is, there were some things that you disagreed with Dr. John MacArthur.
Yeah, when people ask me, what specifically do you disagree with him on? The example I would always give, well, he pronounces the name of the devil as Belial. And I say Belial.
Oh, come on.
And I say Belial.
And they let you get away with that?
And I looked it up. And I have a book of proper pronunciations for biblical names. And I was right. It's Belial, not Belial.
The question,
I never convinced him of that.
The question, though, that I wanted to ask, that I think a lot of people are wanting to just understand, where is it at in the process? Are we going to be hearing about a new, call it senior pastor of Grace Community Church anytime soon?
Eventually, yes.
Okay, anytime soon.
It depends on what you mean by soon. I would say you can expect to begin to hear that discussion shortly after the Shepherd's Conference. I don't think anything's going to happen before the first or second week of March where we have the Shepherd's Conference. Too much else going on right now.
Fair enough. Maybe some more conversations, but there's no deadline on this. Why what appears to be a lack of urgency to fill that role? What's the thinking behind it?
Because Grace is blessed with a plethora of capable men who can fill the pulpit and do a fine job of biblical exposition. And so there just is no hurry to do that.
But going back to our prior conversation about ecclesiology and church polity and structure, doesn't it seem that the Organism of Grace Community Church needs a head? And they would, so what is, okay, certainly you've got oodles of great guys who can preach, but why not a rush to get that role filled?
Because you don't want to get the wrong guy. And so we want to do a very careful process of candidating. I don't think there's not even a list of nominees at this point. And yes, you want to have a leader amongst the elders, but it's not like we can't function until we get that guy. There's enough biblical wisdom among our elders that we can continue in the course that was set by John.
All right. So currently there is not a formal seeking of candidates.
No.
All right. So it's going to be a bit then. No,
that will be. Yeah.
Phil, could you talk to them about changing that? Because I made a prediction on a YouTube video for 2026 that maybe we'd be hearing about a replacement. So in order for my prophecy to come true, if you could just get on that, I'd be super grateful. Phil Johnson, the state of evangelical Christianity. Until tomorrow, go serve your king.